What's up, guys? I'm sure many of you play fantasy football. I know I do. I know Weiss does. If you need some advice, make sure you stay ahead of the curve with a new podcast called Fantasy Foresight. Jay and Ben, they focus 100% on fantasy football. They share their total foresight with private metrics and projections you can't get anywhere else, and they want to help you win your fantasy football league. If you play fantasy football, whether you're a veteran like myself or this is your first season, you can't afford to miss their podcast. It's called the Fantasy Foresight Podcast. Make sure to check them out.
Of course.
Get out of my way. I'll take care of this. Okay, what seems to be the problem, officers?
Not now, Dwight. We got a call about a disturbance?
Nope, nothing disturbing here. Just a couple of friends having an awesome dinner party.
Their neighbors say they heard some shouting.
Oh, yes, there was screaming, but my girlfriend threw a Dundee at my TV. Plasma.
You want to press charges?
Would she get into trouble?
Yeah, she'd be charged.
I will take the fall.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again, right ahead of the bye week and right after the arrest of Kyle Lauletta. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow me on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Smash that five-star rating. Go to iTunes, go to Google Play, go to Spotify. Rate us five stars. We love each and every one of you, and we appreciate you listening every week, even though the Giants are trash. But we like to think that this podcast is not. All right. The Giants went into the bye week one loss worse than I had projected. I think my original projection was they start 1-6 and beat the Redskins. They had their chances. I was wrong. I don't think we really need to beat a dead horse, although I'm sure we'll get into some of the stuff from the game this past week. But I think we wanted to lead off with the big news of the day, which is the man we all want to be starting after the bye week got arrested today. Kyle Lauletta arrested on a traffic violation on his way to the facility. You got to at least respect the dedication trying to get to practice on time. If you live in the New York, New Jersey area, you know how bad the traffic can get. Am I right?
Well, the thing is, I was going to say, Kyle Lauletta got arrested for driving like a New York taxicab driver.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
he learned from the best. Yeah. So what, he cut across two lanes, ignored a cop, cut off a cop, almost hit a cop car, refused to roll down his window or get out of the car when the cop pulled him over. How dumb can you be? You got to think he saw the writing on the wall, though. Pat Shurmur didn't come out and say it, but you got to think if Kyle Lauletta was willing to get arrested trying to get to practice on time, that there was a very good chance that he was getting a start after the bye week.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because it was supposed to be like the...
I mean, people were like joking about it, but now that I say it out loud, it sounds legit, right? Like, what looks bad is if you're projected to start amongst the entire circus of, that is the New York Giants organization, is that the guy that everyone now wants to start in place of your washed-up future Hall of Fame quarterback, now you're late to practice. I mean, that's a bad look. Now, don't get me wrong, getting arrested is an even worse look. I don't think he thought he was going to be arrested. But you got to think that Pat Shurmur told him, hey, there's a good chance that you start post-bye week, get your ass to the facility on time, and let's get you ready.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, listen, I think his time was or is or whatever was
approaching.
Approaching, but it sucks because today was sort of like the, you know, veterans have off day, and it was a chance for Lauletta to get a lot of the
exactly
reps in practice, and I mean, oh my God, I mean, how do you even describe this? I mean...
It's just wild. Like, of all the storylines surrounding the Giants over the last few years, I mean, can I be frank with you? Like, the backup quarterback getting arrested because he wants to get to practice on time, like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
We'd all be dying if Davis Webb did this.
Yeah, and I travel up to New York a lot, so I am sort of familiar with that area, like, and I know traffic can be really bad, when you're coming up 95 and trying to get on 495. I sort of have a vision of where that area is. But, I mean, Kyle Aletta, what are you doing? I mean, first of all, having to rush to get to practice
not
probably
a good look.
Means that you're running late.
Yep.
And that's probably not a good look. And there's sort of like this unwritten football rule where quarterbacks show up at 4 a.m. and, you know, like...
yeah, watching know, like game that. Film, yeah. The first one's in, last one's out sort of deal.
Exactly, yeah. So for him to sort of be running late is not a good look for him.
I'll say this, though.
Yeah.
He can only go up from here.
Yeah.
The bar is literally set so low for him based on Eli Manning's play and the fact that he's been arrested. I mean, you can only go up. Spin zone.
I mean, I don't know. I don't even know. Like, I mean, he was probably, you know, going to play at some point. I don't know if this completely knocks him out of the knocks his opportunity out the window, or I just don't know. But it's just like it's another embarrassing thing for a once proud organization.
It's that, Murphy's Law.
That, you know, yeah, basically like an organization that once, you know, won games and won championships and was, you know, sort of the face of how of the NFL and how an organization is supposed to be run.
Well, yes and no, but well, yeah.
When you're winning games, people try to copy. Like at one point, people thought, you know, they were trying to mimic the Giants organization.
Sure.
Like they were when people were looking for GMs, they would first go to the Giants, you know, front office. Like we can go back in history and we can, you know, you can look at teams that interviewed, you know, people that used to work for the Giants or do work for the Giants. Point being, this organization is so just bottomless pit, joke of the day, joke of the town, joke of the
Browns
season.
East.
I mean, I don't even, I think they've like when you've lost as many games as the Giants have, you sort of are the Browns. But I think that they're starting to go below that. Like, I can't even describe to you how embarrassing this is. Like, you're 4-20 in the last 24 games. And just look at the stuff that's happened to this team. Look at the stupid decisions. Forget about, you know, personnel decisions.
Well, we could bring it back to last year.
Yeah, or we can bring him back to the year before that.
Yeah.
The Josh Brown thing.
Right. Josh Brown, Landon Collins calling Eli Apple a cancer.
Yes.
Everything regarding Eric Flowers ever.
Yes. You know, the Odell drama and just like
all the Odell drama.
Everything surrounding this team. And your backup quarterback, who you drafted in the 4th round, who is probably going to play either after the bye or couple weeks after the bye or who knows when. But he was going to play, get his opportunity, gets arrested for driving like an idiot and almost running over a police officer.
Yep. It's not a good look.
No, it's not. And it's just continued embarrassment, sort of like... I can't fathom any more words about this team anymore.
The Giants are on bye, and their offense still managed a bad drive.
Jokes like that.
I had fun with that today. I had a lot of fun with the driving jokes.
Oh, man.
For a slow day with the trade deadline, listen, you never want to see anyone on your team get arrested, but it was a little bit funny. We can have a little bit of fun with this one.
Yeah, I mean, there was some stuff that I saw on the internet. I mean, people were talking about how the Mannings set up Loretta.
If you don't think that Archie Manning, the Mannings are like the Clintons of the NFL. They will call in any favor.
That's a great comparison. The Clintons of the NFL.
I mean, listen, without getting too much into the politics, but if you don't think that, if you don't think Archie Manning even had like a little thought in the back of his head, like, how can I try to prolong Eli as a Giant? I mean, this is the perfect crime.
I mean,
he just bought his son probably one more week.
Yeah. maybe the whole season.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Knock on wood. So, bottom line, Murphy's Law, Lauletta arrested, not great.
We still got, this is only the halfway point.
I know, man. Fuck, we still have 8 weeks. I don't know if I could do this for eight more weeks, nine more weeks.
No, I don't know. I don't know what else, I mean, what else can we see?
Yeah. Let's talk trade deadline a little bit. Giants quiet today. I mean, listen, we were all hoping for a Janoris Jenkins trade. We were all keeping our eye on a Landon Collins trade because there were rumblings of that, apparently.
I don't know why, but...
Well, you know, listen, you know, teams reach out. I totally believe that a team would reach out. I don't think the Giants would accept a trade unless it was, like, a first, which I don't think anyone would offer given, you know, his pending contract situation. But you got to at least ask, especially if the team is in full fire sale mode.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Janoris Jenkins, I mean, he is, you know, getting up there in age. He has some character concerns, obviously, what happened last year and some of the stuff we're seeing this season.
But he is a perfect rental for a team like the Steelers or the Chiefs.
Yeah,
and I'm a little bit surprised that no one, you know, sort of bid on that.
Well,
I'm curious what the asking price is.
If I'm a team like the Chiefs or if I'm a team like the Steelers, right, who I'm desperate for cornerback help or any kind of defensive help, and I see my team is in the middle of a playoff, in the middle of a division race hunt, and I see that my quarterback is sort of on the back nine, but he's still playing at a very high level, and I have these highly paid players, and I have, you know, Le'Veon Bell, who's, you know, when he's on the field, he's one of the top five, you know, skill position players in the league.
Yeah.
And or top 10, whatever. So I know he's eventually going to come back at some point. Point being, I have a very talented roster, and I have a chance to really, you know, make some noise. Why not trade a third round pick?
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
You know, like that's something I don't understand about these teams. That teams overvalue their picks way too much.
Yeah, what it goes back to, and this is an argument that I make regarding the Islanders a lot, and I think it's definitely true with hockey, and I feel like it's an argument that should be made more often with football. Right? It's the argument of basically trading a dart throw for a proven commodity, right? Like you know what you're getting out of a Jenkins. Third round pick, I mean, you don't really know. It's a toss up.
Yeah, and then it's like it's
even like 50% of first round picks are a toss up half the time.
And yeah, just look at the 2013 draft, look at the 2015 draft.
Right.
How many of those first round picks are no longer with teams? How many of those first round picks didn't have their fifth year option picked up? So my point is that every team is different. Like obviously if the Giants, you know, 1-7 started trading draft picks for, you know, veteran players with, you know, a lot of money owed to them, that'd be a stupid thing to do.
Right.
But a team that's in contention, that, you know, could use a corner or could use a receiver or could use, you know, a lineman or whatever.
Pass rusher.
Exactly.
Pass premium rusher. Position.
You go for it, you know, and so it boggles my mind that the Steelers didn't make a move. I thought for sure that they would look to add a corner. The Chiefs, that was a team that was sort of iffy to me because it seemed like
I can understand it because they're a team I 100% believe could literally just outscore anybody.
And not only that, I think they're sort of playing the wait and see approach because remember, Eric Berry is not back yet.
Right.
So maybe they want to see what they have with Eric Berry first. Still, I still think they should have.
Yeah, you can never have too much depth.
Yeah, go get a HaHa Clinton Dix or go get a Janoris Jenkins or a Gayron Conley or somebody like that. So I'm surprised that some of these contending teams like Pittsburgh and Kansas City stood pat. Now the LA Rams, that team is going for it.
Yeah, right.
Dante Fowler Jr. Yeah. That team is going for it. That team has Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh and Michael Brockers on the defensive line.
And then they added Fowler.
That's not enough. We need
a firepower
speed rusher. That's what I like to see from teams. And then obviously Howie Roseman in Philly. I hate to give the Eagles credit, but look at that. I mean, look what he did.
Yeah. Now I gotta ask you a question. Maybe I'm just not paying too much attention to it. What, you know, sure. Golden Tate, he's not a number one receiver. He's good. I'll say that. He's good. He's not very good. He's not shit. Now, why would a team that was apparently going for it a week ago by trading for the best run stuffer in the NFL trading away a productive receiver like that when, you know, outside of Marvin Jones, Kenny Golladay has been, you know, up and down. He had a great start to the season recently. He's been so-so.
Right. Why would they trade Golden Tate?
Yeah, I don't get it. Unless he was, like, seriously unhappy and demanding a trade.
I mean, I don't know what was going on in the locker room. again, I don't know what Detroit's mindset was. But for the Eagles, you look at Golden Tate's skill sets, and it fits what kind of system you're running in Philly. So you bring him in here, and you automatically plug him in, and you know that he's going to make an impact. And you know he's going to help Carson Wentz out a lot. So Howie Roseman continues to put his foot on the gas, continues to move forward, even after that team won a Super Bowl last year. I mean, that's the kind of GM that I like. That's not going to sit here and just, you know, overvalue his picks. He's going to go for it, and, you know, kudos to them. The Redskins got Clinton Dix. I like that move because...
Yeah, the NFC East got better today.
Yeah, I mean, because first of all, you saw what Dallas did last week. They got went out and got Amari Cooper. Forget about what they gave up for him.
Yeah.
They got Amari Cooper, right? Then the Eagles turn around and get Golden Tate, right? So then the Redskins are looking at it, well, we're 5-2. We're in first place, but what? We're not content because we know that even though our secondary is strong, our defense has been playing well, we can go and get a Clinton Dix. So you give up a fourth-round pick. You get who's still a young player, good player. You plug him in with DJ Swanger and Norman.
That's a good secondary.
And then, you know, you got a good secondary to go along with your already stout front seven. So
yeah.
I like the type of moves that were made today for the teams. As far as the Giants go, I mean, who knows what offers they got for Janoris Jenkins, if they got anything. But if you're planning on parting ways with him at the end of the season, I don't know. I mean, you almost have to see what you can get, but I don't know. I was surprised they didn't move him because it definitely seemed like he was a guy that was going to get moved. But I don't know.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, let's be real here. If you're a veteran who's been with the team for a few years like Jenkins has, I mean, there's no doubt he's fed up with the situation. I mean, he's blatantly given up on a number of plays. You know, I'm a little shocked his agent and him himself didn't sort of force the issue a little bit more and really try to get moved at the deadline.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think could it be that, you know, they did, but nothing really trans. I mean, it's hard to really understand. Maybe Jenkins didn't want to be a, you know, a guy that forces his way out, that impacts his value or his future earnings. Could that might have played a role, possibly? But yeah, I mean, he's 29 years old. He's going to be, well, he just turned 29 right now. He still has, I think, a couple more years left where he can play at a high level. But someone that's, you know, getting close to 30, you know, you would probably want to play for a contender and not a team that's sort of entering a rebuilding stage. But what it was definitely surprising that he stuck around. It'll be interesting to see if they part ways with him after the season. I think many people are excited, but you know, who knows? Who knows what?
Yeah, and you know, maybe I mean, again, you said who knows? Maybe an underrated narrative. I don't know what he's like in the locker room or in the film room, but after giving away Eli Apple, the Giants have a lot of young unknowns at the cornerback position. So who knows what sort of value he could be to guys like Sam Beal and Haley.
Yeah, and the thing with Landon Collins, though, you talk about impact in the locker room. You know, I know that, you know, listen, I know the teams, the one thing about it is when the team says, like, we're rebuilding, right? Mm-hmm. Automatically, you know, regardless what sport it's in, automatically people just think of, fans think of, Sam Hinkie and the 76ers, right? Taking games, trading away the few good players we have to get more picks and free up cash. You know, that's not what rebuilding is. Rebuilding is you realize you have way too many holes on your roster, so you're gonna try to first clean up the free up cap space. So you move veteran players, you allocate more resources to yourself, and then you identify players that you are essentially using to rebuild your team.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say, well, Landon Collins, when people say Landon Collins is someone you build your defense around, they're not saying he's the forefront of the defense. No, what they're saying is he's a building block to a much greater thing, which is a stronger defense. And that's the same thing with, you know, a guy like Odell on the offense. People say, well, you're rebuilding. What's the point of having, you know, paying a receiver all that money? Well, you are bringing in a young quarterback eventually, or you're bringing in an experienced quarterback. You need somebody like that.
So no, you're 100% right. And going back to the basketball analogy, it's like, you know, five guys on the court, you know, a superstar can take over a game. For you know, in the NFL, it's different. You need at least a few good pieces,
it's
some
the
veterans.
Ultimate team
to,
game.
Exactly.
You know,
it is.
You need. It's crazy because in the NFL, a great player makes a difference. Mm-hmm. An all-pro caliber player makes a difference. Like with Odell Beckham, people don't realize this, but with Odell, right, the Giants are then able to say, you know what, if we put a decent wide receiver two across from him, we know that that decent player can have the impact of a...
He's going to get his.
A very good player because the attention that Odell garners. So by sort of football definition, it's sort of like Odell makes the rest of the receivers better because of how much attention he garners.
Right.
So it's the ultimate team game, and you need great players. And for the Giants, I think right now... We shouldn't say, oh, just see what you can get for everyone. But obviously you're going to listen. If people call, you know, they make an offer, you're going to listen. But you need good players at certain positions. You know, trading away Landon Collins, not paying Landon Collins' money, that, to me, that sets you up for having to overpay for guys like Nate Solder and overpay for guys like Alec Ogletree.
Yeah, exactly.
So you, when you draft a player, he plays well throughout his rookie contract, you pay him his money. Regardless, what's your state of your, you know, franchise? You pay Landon Collins. Landon Collins is one of the best safeties in the game. The way the NFL is set up now, you're the highest paid player till the next player as good as you is up to get paid. Mm-hmm. And it's Landon Collins' turn. And I think we shouldn't just say, "Oh, well, we're rebuilding. Let's get rid of Landon Collins," because essentially then you're just creating a bigger hole and you're setting yourself back even more. So
dart throw, like I said.
Yeah. So I think that rebuilding is something the Giants need to do, but rebuilding doesn't mean that just give away everybody. That's not how this works.
I agree. Any other thoughts on the trade deadline? I got none.
No, I think we covered all our bases.
Thoughts on the Redskins game?
Woo! Listen, I live in the D.C. area.
Yeah, you do.
And every time the Redskins play the Giants and the Redskins win, it sucks for me. But this time... It didn't, because I told everybody the Redskins are going to win this game.
Yep.
And I told them they're going to win it pretty decisively. And so they sort of, I say they felt bad for me because, you know, they see how horrible the Giants are. But my thoughts on the game is pretty much it's another loss that was similar to any other loss the Giants have. They can't move the ball for 59 minutes.
Interesting question.
For 59 minutes. Excuse me, that was my phone. For 59 minutes, they couldn't score touchdowns until the final minute
until,
and a half.
Until Eli padding stats Manning.
Exactly. The defense, again, held up for the most part. They played hard. You saw some of these young guys get a lot of quality snaps, and you want to see that going forward. But again, man, in today's NFL, it's very hard to win games, you know, if you can't score touchdowns. And so
hard-hitting analysis, but it's true.
It's crazy that you have to say it, but I recall looking at Twitter after the game and people were blaming the defense, so which was sort of odd to me. But this is a bad team. This is a team that's going nowhere. Even with Saquon Barkley, you know, having another game where he has over 100 all-purpose yards, even with Odell going for 130, I mean, you see that this team is just so bad. And the quarterback is just – he just looks finished. And we say that
he
every week.
He sounds finished, too.
Yeah, he does. Some of his interviews, some of his quotes are just so telling. And I think you're starting to see Eli – sort of realize that it's coming to an end, and even though he tries to ignore that fact, but I think he realizes it. I think Pat Shurmur is starting to realize it. I think Pat Shurmur's frustration is starting to boil over with the quarterback.
And, I mean, starting to. I mean, he. I said it last week. He leads the league in getting caught on camera telling his quarterback to throw the ball.
Yeah, I mean, there was one point it looked like he was about to just pass out. I think it was the fourth down Evan Engram drop where they showed Pat Shurmur and he was just had his hands on his knees and just looking down like completely disgusted.
Can we talk about Evan Engram?
Yeah, I think I know what people are going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what are your thoughts on it? Like, listen, I get it. I mean, it just reeks of a typical Jerry Reese pick, right? Everyone is like on the David Njoku train, and then, you know, all of a sudden he picks a guy who many were projecting to be a second round pick, and, you know, he had a decently productive rookie season last year, but, you know, let's not forget that was without pretty much any other offensive weapons. They didn't have a good running back. Odell was out. And now this year, you know, to be honest, I don't know whether it's the fact that, you know, he is what he is, or he's regressing, or, you know, maybe a little sophomore slump, or the fact that he doesn't have time to bust open a seam because Eli's not throwing downfield. The offensive line isn't giving Eli enough time, or Eli has enough time and he's checking down. You know, I feel like he's better than what we've seen this year, but I don't know what his ceiling is.
Yeah, it's hard to judge Evan Engram right now. He's been disappointing.
And it's hard to judge him last year, too.
Yeah, because he was a rookie.
Right. But also because there were no other offensive weapons.
Yeah, and the thing is that the one thing about Evan Engram is that he's an undersized tight end who can't block.
Can't block well. He tries.
You can't block well, but at the same time, what his strengths are supposed to be are not.
Right.
He's too many drop passes. And in terms of, you talk about running those seam routes and you know, being able to get open. Yeah, I mean, that also plays a role too, because, you know, by the time he gets 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards down the field, he turns around and the ball's either out or Eli Manning's on the ground.
Right.
So it's tough to judge. I mean, he's been disappointing this year. Am I ready to call him a bust? No. I mean, I think it's too early to do that.
I mean, even then, Odell is having a very productive year, and obviously so is Saquon.
Well, the thing is,
you have to take that into consideration, too.
But you're talking about two generational football players.
That's fine.
Or two out-of-this-world football players. Like, you can't compare Odell to Evan Engram. I mean, Odell,
I mean, that's fine, but at the end of the day, you're also talking about a guy who's 4 inches taller than Odell and is running the same 4.440. You know, I'm not saying he's supposed to be on Odell's level, but he should be producing much better than he has been this season. Granted, he's been injured a little bit, but, you know, he's back healthy now, and against the Redskins, he lays an egg like that.
I mean,
I don't know what else to say.
He's been targeted 26 times this year. He's caught 17 passes.
Yep.
So he's played in what, five games this year?
Yeah.
Five games this year?
Something like that. Yeah. He missed 3 weeks?
Yeah. So so you're essentially looking at about 5 targets a game, and on average he's caught about, what, four of those targets. So it's tough. I mean, Engram, like I said, his strengths are supposed to be being able to catch the ball, make plays in space, but it's not happening right now, and I'm just not ready to call him that yet.
No, me neither.
He's definitely been a disappointment. Yeah.
Yep.
No.
All right.
Does he? I don't know.
Keep going.
I don't know what to say about Engram. It's tough to judge. Tough to judge a lot of these players.
Yeah. No, it's true. Before we get into the next topic, I gotta tell you about the fine folks at mybookie.ag, guys. Football Sundays might be rough for you if you're a Giants fan, but there are plenty of other games you can gamble on Sundays. We're in football heaven right now. Games pretty much every single day of the week for the next 27 days. They'll match your deposit up to $1,000, 100%. MyBookie.ag, promo code NYG. Follow me on the Action app. I've been doing pretty well recently, actually. I had a killer Monday. Went 8-0 plus 9-something units. So go ahead and follow me there. But go check out mybookie.ag, promo code NYG. All right. Draft questions. Here we go. From Amin Herbert doesn't declare. Do you think the next best option is to trade back and collect picks?
I saw this question. So usually when teams trade up, right, what are they trading up for in the first round or getting to the top
five? They're trading for a quarterback.
Right. So if Justin Herbert doesn't declare, it's early, but we're basically saying that there's no quarterback worth taking in the top five, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So why would a team be looking to trade up, and how much are they willing to give up?
That's the thing. If they the year to trade back, if you didn't like a quarterback, was last year,
right?
And they could have gotten a shitload of picks if they hadn't totally projected that Barkley was 100% the pick. Again, we got into that this past offseason with how the Giants are like. They're like a gossiping high school girl. They can't keep anything in house. Yeah, you're right. It would essentially take some team to be absolutely in love with Ed Oliver or Nick Bosa. And if that's the case, I mean, listen, you said it. They're not going to get the same haul that they would if there was a quarterback available. At this point, I don't know. We both need to study the draft a little bit more. I can't say I'm opposed to either option right now. I mean, listen, Ed Oliver or Nick Bosa, they're going to help your team. You know, you line one of them up opposite Olivier Vernon. You got Lorenzo Carter. You get a sick pass rush. You got to win in the trenches. But it's too early to tell. A lot of it's going to depend on how these quarterbacks perform rest of the season and which one of them, you know, Herbert decides to come out.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because all year long and all offseason long, we've been told that you can get your quarterback in any draft.
Yeah, exactly. Not anymore.
Okay. No, not anymore at all.
This one is from Quran, I think. Giants move on from Eli after the season or let him finish his last year, making it his farewell season, which is John Mara more likely to do? Also, Daniel Jones is his successor? ?
This has to be it for Eli.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know how you can bring him back.
No, this is it's not a matter of if this is his last season, it's how they decide to let him go.
Yeah.
It's whether or not they decide Lauletta deserves snaps, which he does. But I think they'll essentially market it properly where they'll say this is Eli's last game as a starter and then we're going to try out Kyle Lauletta and then he'll get his farewell at the end of the season and that'll be it.
I think Eli Manning, the Giants can't do anything right? Especially when it comes to the quarterback position.
Correct.
My hope is that Eli sort of comes to the organization and says, look,
I get it.
You know, I want to be the starting quarterback, but like you said, I get it. Let's figure this out together. Let's do a press conference. Let me go and announce it that, hey, this is my last year. Either with the team or with retiring, whatever. I'm hoping something like that happens toward the end of the season. Because I don't know if this owner knows how to do it properly. I really don't. So
no one should really have faith that he does.
No.
Daniel Jones. Have you watched any Daniel Jones at all?
The Duke quarterback.
Yes. Who shares the same quarterback coach as the Mannings.
That's
the only connection there. And that's the only reason people are asking. He's not a... I'll watch more of him. I don't think he's a first-round talent. I don't think that he should be the pick. I don't think he's the future. But whatever. It's a non-issue right now.
Just looking at this draft overall, it's not a loaded draft class. There's talent.
Yeah.
There's definitely a thing, but this isn't a, oh my God, draft class where there's like 15 to 20 or 20 to 25 elite prospects.
Correct.
So that's all I'll say about that. All
right, let's see what else we got here. Got to pull up the tweet again. Let's see. Do you think we should trade back in the draft and still be able to take Herbert? No. Can we trade for Fitzmagic? No.
Quarterback hell. That's what. That. You don't ask that question if your team's not in quarterback hell.
Correct. From Monty, chances we, quote, address, unquote, the quarterback position this offseason by drafting Shermer's son.
The dude from Vanderbilt.
Yes. Kyle Shermer. I mean, it's impossible to answer these questions. This is actually a good one from Kamal. What's your take on the players that have departed and found success on different teams? JPP has 8 sacks. Snacks already has 1. Kennard and Aquara both have 5 each. Knowing our schemes, do you think they'd have the same success if we kept them? Or are we just god-awful? And then there's a second question. Over-under, Shermer has 9 wins with the Browns in 2 seasons. So far, 1 with us. Does he top 9 wins at the end of next year? Let's touch on the former departed players first.
The first one to me is DJ Fluker.
Yeah. Who pancaked pancaked Snacks last week.
And that's one play, but he's had bad moments, but he's been a very solid addition.
He's been very productive. Seahawks,
and he's helped turn around their running game that struggled last year. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line is still shaky, but in terms of run blocking and overall nastiness, he's helped that offensive line so much. And we're left with Patrick Omame.
Yeah. For 3 years.
For 3 years.
$12 million.
$15 million.
Yeah, $15 million.
JPP.
Yeah.
JPP is tough for me because I feel like I said after the season when Gettleman was fired, I said they needed to move on from either Olivier Vernon or JPP. Primarily JPP because of his, you know, hand injury and, you know, age and all that. I don't know what to make of it, man. It's tough because he has 8 sacks. He's playing pretty well down there. But that defense is still bad. You know, so you look at his contract and you look at what the Giants
got. For JPP, I think a lot of I think a lot of his production is due to the fact that the Bucs' pass defense is so bad that they're constantly getting into shootouts. Yeah, and these other teams are just passing the ball all day long.
Yep. That could also play a role, yes.
Shermer, 9 wins by the end of next season. Yes or no?
I think he gets 1 or 2 more this year. Then I think he gets at least 5 or 6 next year. So I'm going to say more.
Yeah, I'll say more. I don't think the team's going to be. I'm not going to say that. I'll save that for next season.
I'm waiting for Dave Gettleman to get up at the podium.
And John Mara.
Yeah, I mean, John Mara's
press conference
at the end of the season, but I'm waiting for Dave Gettleman to get up there.
Curious to see what he has to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
From Malcolm, what scale on a 0 to 100 level would be if Odell had been the arrested one? How do you think Pat Leonard would cover it, or how would the Maras speak on it?
Oh, my God. Could you imagine? It'd
be doomsday.
Well, first of all,
I would have had the brigade at the ready. All day.
First of all, if I shouldn't say this, I'm not gonna say it.
Oh, come on.
No.
Okay.
I texted it to you earlier today.
Oh yeah. Okay, I know what you're gonna say. Yeah, I agreed with you, but we'll save it.
Yeah, well, I'm not gonna say that.
From the Nonsense 44, can you and Weiss go in on Ralph Vacchiano and Sean O'Hara with how stupid they looked when they tweeted during the failed fourth down intended for Engram?
I already called out Sean O'Hara. He's not.
What did they say about the fourth down? I know that they've been standing for Eli for the entire fucking season, and it makes me want to blow my brains out, but what did they say specifically about the Engram thing?
The Engram thing is basically catch the ball, but with Sean O'Hara, I just, for once in his life, forget about, he's never going to say anything negative about Eli Manning,
right,
besides the fact that he's not playing well, but the offensive line stinks.
Right.
Okay, I get it, Sean. I'm waiting for him to address the fact that last year, after a game against the Packers, he called Eric Flowers a coach killer.
Yep.
Okay, and a year later, the team that employs the coach that Eric Flowers quote-unquote killed signed him.
Mm-hmm.
The Jaguars.
Yep.
Tom Coughlin, Pat Flaherty. So I'm waiting for Sean O'Hara to address that. He hasn't yet to address that. If you're listening to this, can you tweet him and ask him to address it? Because I did, and he didn't answer me. So as far as the other reporter goes, I mean, I hope. I got no comment on him.
Yeah, I mean, his Twitter feed just pisses me off.
Everybody's got a motive.
Yes.
I'll just say that. Okay?
Yes.
I mean, when it comes to
just look at his
media,
Twitter bio.
Yeah. Everybody's got motives in the media, okay? And certain people want to do certain things, so they say certain things to just, like you said, look at his bio.
Yeah.
Can I ask you something?
You can.
There was a story this afternoon that came out. I think it was Jay Glazer.
Mm-hmm.
About,
oh, yeah, I wanted to talk about this. Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, 2008.
Yep.
Giants didn't want to give up a third round. Jerry Reese didn't want to give
up a third round. The infamous Jerry Reese third rounder.
Yes. I mean, you want to talk about adding salt to the wounds. Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. And it's,
But how much do you think it was the fact that Kevin Boss was there?
Oh, God. I don't care, man. You got a chance to add a generational tight end like that. I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about. This is what the Rams did. They went out and they got the pass rusher. Right. What is giving up a third for a generational tight end when you're arguably the best team in the league through 8 weeks?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it right now, it's like, yeah. But, and I'm not making an excuse. I definitely think it should have done the move. But I mean, at the time, you had Kevin Boss, who he stepped in a year earlier for Jeremy Shockey and played very well. And then at the same time, you traded away Shockey. I think they got, what, like a third, a fourth?
Third and a fourth fifth, and a seventh or something?
Something like that.
Second and a fifth? I don't remember.
It was something like that. You could have traded a third for Tony Gonzalez.
Yes.
But again, sometimes it's the moves you don't make that hurt you
exactly.
More.
Exactly. And listen, he didn't know that Plaxico was going to go shoot himself. But again, if you got firepower, there's no harm in adding more, especially with a dart throw like that.
And who do they take with that third round pick?
It was either Barden or Manningham.
It was the following year, 2009. And I believe that was Ramses Barden. 2009.
I hate everything.
I mean, if it's Manningham, then people are like, okay. You know. But the 2009 Giants draft was Ramses Barden.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Hey, like I said, sometimes the move you don't make are the ones
that hurt you the most.
Hurt you most. Yep.
Yep. All right. That's all I got.
It's a bye week. Hopefully nobody else gets arrested.
We'll be back next week. I think we're supposed to have a guest.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm not going to spoil who it is. I think you guys will like it.
Got 8 more weeks of this, man.
I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Me neither. Yeah. Well, the third round pick, they had 2/3. It was Ramses Barden and Travis Beckham.
Travis Beckham, a.k.a. Evan Ingram.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
They took Knicks in the first round, obviously. And then they got Clint Sintem and Will Beattie.
Yep.
That draft would have looked a lot better if one of those picks were Tony Gonzalez.
100%. Who would have been productive for the next 3 years?
He hit like 50 touchdowns in Atlanta.
All right, that's it.
Oh, man. Oh, one more thing.
Okay.
How about Mark Ross today?
Yeah, we should talk about that.
I mean,
how arrogant are you? And by the way, I mean, not even being discreet in the slightest trying to land a TV job now that you're out of a football job.
I mean, what in the hell? It's almost like he went up there to say, I wanted to move on from Eli Manning, too.
Right.
You know, like, I was, it's like, oh, my
Bro,
goodness.
Bro, just look at your drafting record and shut up.
And then, you know what's the funny thing? John Mara interviewed this guy for the GM job.
Yeah.
And it's not like John Mara interviewed
and then
40
fired
people.
Him.
Like, it's not like the John Mara interviewed 40 people like the Mets did or allegedly did.
Jesus Christ. I don't want to talk about the Mets.
He was one of 4 candidates.
Yeah. Well, I think we know why he didn't get it. And probably why he was fired.
He was fired a week later.
Unbelievable.
Imagine getting interviewed for a promotion and then a week later getting fired.
Unbelievable.
Mark Ross.
Shut the fuck up, dude.
Can we stop putting microphones in front of Mark Ross and Ben McAdoo's face?
I mean, it's like, no one cares what they think. You guys are part of a failed Giants regime. Just shut up and move on. Let it be.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if these people try to contact Jerry Reese.
Yeah. Kudos to him. Art Stapleton pointed it out. He has not gone to the media or to the press at all with any comments about his tenure there. So I could say one nice thing about him.
Who, Jerry?
Yeah.
I mean, he was never good with the media anyway.
Correct.
But I don't know, man. Speaking of Jerry Reese, does he get into the Giants Ring of Honor?
Oh, God.
No, seriously, does he get into the Giants Ring of Honor?
I guess he has to.
Like, how long do the Giants have to wait?
Oh, at least 10 years.
I think more.
More, yeah.
Because I feel like if this rebuild doesn't work, right, and this regime fails, I feel like people are still going to blame Jerry Reese for it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, like, I think fans will still be
the
like,
the stink
well,
is going to be on him for a while.
He failed the Giants so miserably that Dave Gettleman couldn't fix him. So, I feel like it's going to be like 15 years.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time.
Man, oh, man. I hope to be around when the Giants put Jerry Reese in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, man. What a day that'll be.
Do you sort of like FedEx him his, what do they give him, like a ring or something?
I don't even know.
Oh, don't worry about the speech, Jerry.
Yeah. We'll just discreetly put your name there and you just don't have to show up or talk.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a technicality.
Don't worry about coming to Jersey in December. Just here's your ring.
Oh, boy. All right.
Fun times.
Fun times in Giants world. All right. That's it. Follow me on Twitter, EthanGSN, follow Weiss, NYG Daily, the blog at GothamSN, subscribe, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.